Hello and welcome to another episode of India on Cricket 8, your number one podcast for all things Indian cricket related. As always, I'm your host, Nikesh Raghani, commentator, broadcaster and journalist. And joining me this week is massive Indian cricket fan and host of his own podcast, Srinath Gore. Welcome, Srinath. How are you?
Hey, Nikesh. Thanks for having me. I'm doing well. It was a really nice test match. Super excited to talk about that. Good that India won as well, so it gives me a little bit more pep in my step to have this chat with you.
Of course, yeah, indeed, as it does many Indian cricket fans all around the world. And talking of all corners of the world, you're joining us from the Netherlands. That's where you're based. How's the Netherlands looking today on this early February morning?
I wish it was like Visakhapatnam. It is not. It's been a gray set of days over the last week or so. But yeah, I mean, inside home, nothing much to complain. But going outside is not as nice as, all of those folks were having a nice time sitting outside and enjoying the game in Visakhapatnam.
Yeah, you want to try living in the UK like me, hey? More gray days than anything else for most of the year, really, but from a couple of months, maybe during cricket season. But yeah, we were, of course, keeping our action on all eyes on the action in Visakhapatnam, of course. And what a test match it turned out to be. Another exciting test match, another test match where we didn't quite know what was going to happen early on, as has been the case with a lot of Indian test cricket at home in India over the last decade or so, really. India get into a certain position, they take a first innings lead, a big lead once again, and you think it's pretty much game done and dusted there. Wasn't the case in, of course, the first test match. And again in Visakhapatnam as well, you know, England, although they did maybe realistically have a chance of chasing down that 399 in the fourth innings, I mean, it was because of the way England play their cricket, nobody was writing them off. So overall, another really gripping test match for fans from both sides.
Absolutely. I think you said it right. I don't know, maybe 5-7 years ago. Going into the fourth to the fifth day, there wouldn't have been the same level of excitement as there was yesterday. I really felt like the match could go in either direction, which is, I mean, just the fear or the, you know, thinking twice that England have made oppositions do just by the way that, you know, they play their cricket. That's been exciting for me, like, which is why, like, I was like tuned in yesterday to make sure that, you know, I'm able to catch all of the action. I just wanted to start us off with one stat, which I felt like described what's going on in this series fairly well. This was the first time ever in India that all four innings, the team scored more than 250. And all four innings, 10 wickets were lost. And I feel like that talks about, you know, the there was a lot of chatter going into this series about, you know, the pitches and how, like, you know, it's going to be, you know, dust bowls and things of this nature. I've really enjoyed the quality of the pitches, like, you know, all four innings scoring 50 and more. That was like, that doesn't happen in every test match. I've really enjoyed the quality of the pitches and the quality of cricket that is being played overall. So yeah, all in all, I thought it was a really good test match to watch going into the fifth.
And obviously, look, you're right about the pitches and you know, all the inevitable chat ahead of any series in India, especially when you're playing somebody like England with all the British press and media sort of, you know, almost jumping on the bandwagon, so to speak, about, you know, spinning pitches, dust bowls, dirt tracks. You know, you see all the memes online building up to a series as well. And it's all a bit of shithousery, really. It's done a little bit in jest, a little bit to wind up the Indian Twitter public that is out there that is very passionate, as we both know. And it tends to work. To a large extent as well. So, I mean, some of it's done in good spirits anyway. But this particular pitch in Vizag, I mean, on the first day, India win the toss, they decide to have a bat first. It looked like an absolute belter. And in the build-up to the test as well, I had Abhishek Jhunjhunwala, former IPL player who plays in Legends League cricket now over in India. And he was talking about playing in Vizag very recently. He got some runs in Vizag. And he said, look, if the pitch is anything like that one that I played on recently, then you can forget about spinners. You probably need three fast bowlers and maybe one spinner and just pray to God that you can get the team out before they score 500. It almost had that feel about it on the first day. And India would have been disappointed, really, at the position they found themselves in, not only after the first day, but then, you know, not managing to make that 450-500 in the first innings. And it was really largely down to that man, Yashasvi Jaiswal, the new rising star of Indian cricket at the top of the order, with that brilliant double century, which saved India's blushes to an extent. Nobody else scored more than 35.
Yeah, that was, I'm pretty sure like they look back at it and see it as a lost opportunity. One dude who went on more than 35 got a double hundred. It really shows like, you know, if you get it in, like it was starting to get a lot more easier. It felt like there some of the ways in which, you know, these wickets fell, they were almost like giveaways as opposed to like, you know, strategically thought out. I was just thinking about, you know, what you just said. It felt like, you know, teams should have gone in with one or two more, and at least another pacer, as opposed to England and also India, we went in with two pacers, but essentially one pacer. England deciding to... I was struggling to understand, like, the decision-making in the first test and right now in the second test. Like, you know, the first test, they went in with Mark Wood keeping Anderson out. I mean, I can't for the heck of me understand, like, happening anywhere in the world that Anderson wouldn't be a plus for your side, for the leadership that he brings, for any conditions that he can exploit. I couldn't understand why England wouldn't play Anderson. Thankfully for England, I think they won that test match, so there wasn't a whole bunch of chatter around why, you know, Anderson didn't play over Wood and stuff like that. But I was happy to see that, you know, they rectified that and they played Anderson instead of Mark Wood. Have you heard anything on why Anderson didn't play in the first match?
Look, it was basically the fact that England wanted to go in really spin heavy, that obviously built into that hype leading into the series that every track is going to turn from ball one. And look, it was obviously the case that it did take a lot of turn in that first test. However, when you consider you've got somebody like Jimmy Anderson who can exploit those reverse swinging conditions, keep things tight, ball wicket to wicket, doesn't concede many runs at all, they just got excited about the fact that Mark Wood brings that extra pace. The thing they didn't realise is that it might leave the hand at 145, 150 kilometres an hour. By the time it gets to the batter, it's like 120. So it's Indian pitches. This is what they do. There's no bounce. There's no carry necessarily, to the extent that you would get in England or certainly in a place like Australia or South Africa. So they just got carried away. They've recently been to Pakistan, where Mark Wood played that aggressor's role for them and, you know, was able to bowl those quick spells and extract a lot out of those pitches. But again, what a lot of people, they fall into this trap of thinking that South Asian pitches are all uniform kind of surfaces, where they're not. Pakistan is completely different in terms of the pitches that they offer up to what happens in India, particularly for test matches. I mean, look, in India, you can prepare pitches similar to that in Pakistan. They just don't. So the surfaces are very, very different in test match cricket when you're looking across those two nations. So yeah, they just got too excited. And Anderson showed his absolute brilliant skill in that first innings in particular, you know, 3 for 47. And what those figures were is the way he bowled and the way he kept pressure on that Indian batting lineup.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, if you like watching cricket, irrespective of like, I mean, I'm not going to support another side that's not India, but I couldn't help myself but, you know, really getting excited watching Anderson bowl. Like, that was an incredible, like, couple of spells that he bowled with the new ball and then back again with the old ball. And You know, to think that, you know, he was the only like pacer on the side with like three almost newbies. That attack didn't feel like that. And I think that was like big credit to what Anderson did, at least like, you know, settling down with a couple of wickets initially, bringing the middle order in, which the Indian middle order is like, you know, not the most proven in the test match circuit. So, and opening them up to the spinners, as opposed to like, you know, someone like Rohit Sharma, if he had like stayed out until the spinners were, it would have been a different game altogether. So yeah, Jimmy Anderson, I feel like changed that game in more ways than one.
Jimmy Anderson, I mean, you know, what a story is, what a character he is. I've been lucky enough to work with him quite a bit in the past, commentating for the BBC. So when obviously he's not playing in white ball cricket these days, you know, when England are in action, he usually comes and works for the BBC. So, you know, been lucky enough to share commentary boxes with him. And you kind of look at Jimmy Anderson, you see a sort of grumpy old man these days. And he is, look, he's into his fifth decade on this planet, and he's still playing test cricket, which is a testament to him. He's always been a grumpy bastard, but in the best possible way. He's such a lovely bloke. He's got a brilliant attitude. Usually livens up after a drink or two, and he's a bit more smiley and chirpy. But when he's focused on cricket, he might not talk a lot. He might grunt a lot. He might have that sort of look on his face where he just looks pissed off all the time. But he is such a massive thinker of the game, and always striving to improve and look at different areas to exploit these little marginal things which people might not consider uber important when, you know, going in and preparing to play in a test match. But these are the little margins which has allowed him, since the age of 35, which is quite a long time ago in Jimmy Anderson's case, 6 years ago, he's averaging 22 in test cricket. I mean, you look at the start of his career, I mean, his average just keeps coming down, 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 down. It's unbelievable how this guy just keeps churning out wickets. So in the 22nd year, this is consecutively, that Jimmy Anderson has taken a test wicket. Unbelievable.
Yeah, 184 test matches. I mean, good God. Like, that is like, that is longevity. And yeah, to take a wicket, you know, in 22 years straight, this guy is, you know, top three all time in my book, at least as a, you know, paceman, as a swing bowler. Like, he's probably one of the best to ever do it. So that was incredible to watch for me. And I mean, I also want to, you know, really give credit to the English spinners. A lot was made out of the fact that Shoaib Bashir was, you know, firstly, like, stuck in Dubai. And there was a whole, like, you know, story around that, on the fact that it was like a BCCI, you know, strategy to have him there. I mean, like, he's a new boy. Like, you know, why would the BCCI want a new boy like stuck there more? He's probably gonna, you know, play to India's strengths as to anything else. But there was a big hoo-ha, brouhaha around that. I was glad that got resolved, and this guy was able to, like, you know, play in this test.
Yep. And then, look, he performed well. He showed guts. He's got a little bit about him. Very early on into his career, not just his international career, his first class career. I mean, he's played what, 11 first class matches, including this test. And
yeah, like, just had came out of like watching something on Twitter. There was a story around that was pretty incredible.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, what it was is Alistair Cook. So he bowled. There was a montage that the county championship put onto Twitter.
But yeah, I was surprised.
Bowling to Alistair Cook, 25 deliveries, and he was just spot on pretty much all the time.
Is Alistair Cook still playing? Like, this is, I mean, like, him getting picked out of a Twitter video, that was all right. But to know that Alistair Cook is still playing, that was more surprising to me. Tell me a little bit about this.
He loves it. Cookie loves it. I think he's just announced his retirement, if I'm not mistaken. Oh, really? from okay. County cricket. But he was, yeah, I mean, last season he was very much there opening the batting for Essex, and has been for several years since his international retirement. So yeah, a lot of people might not realize that around the world.
Yeah, and I wasn't aware.
He just loves it. he just loves it. And you know, Cookie's another one who's recently moved into the commentary world, as well as, you know, continuing to play county cricket, only exclusively red ball cricket, which is obviously his sort of main strength, you'd think. Just loves it. But now he's going to go back to his farming, which is interesting. But yeah, you know, another legend of the game, and another sort of example in the way that Bashir was picked up, that Stokes just wants to back young talent. And it's not necessarily about your numbers or, you know, you proving something based on your stats. It's, I've watched this kid. He's got something about him. I want him in my team. And I think, obviously, that's not always going to work out. But more often than not, if you back somebody, if you know they've got talent, I mean, once you reach a certain level, you can see cricketers that have got serious talent. And it's about being that man manager and getting the best out of them, because they've not got to that level. They've not played professional cricket without having something about them in terms of performances and talent anyway. It's about how you get the best out of them. And I think Stokes and McCullum have proved brilliant at that. That's England's bowling attack that we've discussed. Let's talk about India in that first innings. Again, England come out like a steam train, as they always do. That's the Baz ball that everybody talks about, the strike rates at the top of the order, that, you know, being on the front foot against the opposition bowlers, trying to score at 7 runs and over early on. And look, the openers have pretty much tried to do that through this entire series so far. And they were doing it well. I mean, Zach Crawley in particular, striking at nearly 100 and was in danger of perhaps taking the game away from India, or certainly getting England up to in and around India's first innings total. But then up steps our very own fast bowling. Can you call him a legend yet? I'm not sure you can. 150 odd test wickets is not probably been long enough. He's got a few years left in the tank. Jasprit Bumrah, what a bowler. I mean, he's got to be the best fast bowler in the world at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, the number of like test wickets, it's just because of the number of test matches that they're playing these days. I'm not sure we can take that much stock in the fact that he's only, like, you know, taken 150 test match wickets. He's probably played like, you know, 50 test matches or something like that. But I wouldn't pick, I mean, these two guys might be the two best in the world right now, James Anderson and Jasprit Bumrah. I don't know if we'd like throw in Pat Cummins in there maybe as the top three right now, but for any pitch anywhere in the world, any format of cricket that you want to take, Jasprit Bumrah is your guy. I mean, that was something special. And like, you know, that was like watching, I don't know, the Pakistan seamers like back in the 90s or something like that. Like, he was doing anything that he wanted to do with the batsman, with the ball. Like, he was literally making the ball talk, deciding which direction that he wanted to take the ball, every ball that he bowled. This was like some top shelf stuff. Bumrah is, I think we can call him a legend for the number of like years that he's played all three like formats right now, and consistently shown out. Even with all of the other Indian pacers, there is no comparison. Like, he is clearly, you know, a notch above everybody else. And when you, like, you know, put him up against Anderson, you see what Anderson was doing, and like, he almost, if not like, you know, matches him, almost beats him with, you know, the Olive Pope delivery. I don't know, I've seen it like 100 times across a whole bunch of like different social media platforms. It is just incredible to watch, like, how he set Ollie Pope for that. And Stokes, what he's been doing to Stokes so far in these, like, first couple of test matches, I want to, like, see if, you know, this continues on. Like, you know, in the first test, it was an out, the ball that went out, that squared him up. In the second test, it's one that came in. I'm, like, looking forward to seeing what's going to happen. Like, is he going to get him bowled a couple of more times in this series? Because this is going to be, you know, nail-biting to watch over the next, like, but Jasprit Bumrah, like the
Stokes' reactions as well to those two deliveries. I mean, the first one in the first test, it was a bit like, well, you know, a little bit of a smile. There's not much I can do about that. The second, I mean, in this test match where he dropped his bat and, you know, arms aloft, outstretched beside him, that look of shock on his face, the fact that he sort of, you know, he made it clear how low he thought that ball kept. I mean, look, it kept a touch low, but it moved two different ways in the air with the angle from around the wicket as well. It would have got pretty much any left-hander in the world out in any era of world cricket. There's not much you can do about that. I mean, look, we've heard Ben Stokes speaking glowingly about Jasprit Bumrah in post-match. I'm not sure dropping the bat and making big issue of things like that is the best thing to do. If it was an Aussie who did that, I think he'd probably be getting a bit more stick because it's Ben Stokes. He's quite likable. Maybe not. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think much was made out of that just because of the, you know, respect that both Jasprit Bumrah and Ben Stokes command in world cricket. It was more a, you know, each other respecting their craft kind of situation. You didn't see like Bumrah really taking offense to that in any way. Like it was also like a very, you know, in jest reaction to that. So I didn't fully understand if Stokes's reaction was of the fact that he was beaten by that ball or that it kept low, maybe a bit of both. But I don't think we can say that, you know, balls were keeping low or like he was going in any direction in this test match. Like the pitch was playing through. There was one odd ball which happens anywhere in the world that keeps a touch higher or a touch lower. So I don't think there was anything to, you know, particularly from a Ben Stokes standpoint, say he was cheated in some way. It was just more, I didn't know that which direction that ball was going, so you got me, kind of like a situation there.
Yeah, absolutely. So 6 for 45 for Bumrah in that first inning, just unbelievable stuff. And, you know, in the process as well, by the way, happened during the course of that innings, 150 test wickets, the second fastest man to 150 test wickets in the history of the game. Second only to one of his heroes, like he mentioned, Waqar Yunis, Wasim Akram. He name-checked post-match, saying he grew up watching the way that they bowled Zaheer Khan in the latter years as well of his youth, I suppose, you know, watching them swing the ball, reverse swing, Yorkers at high pace. He absolutely loved that kind of stuff. I mean, Waqar Yunis is a freak, 27 test matches it took him only to get 150 test wickets. Bumrah, it's done it in 34. Nobody has done it quicker than these two. So, I mean, it's going to be very difficult to imagine anybody beating Waqar Yunis's record of 27. The way he started his career was unbelievable. The fact that Bumrah is the second fastest ever in the history of test cricket to 150 wickets. You look at his average. I mean, it's up there with the very best that ever played the game, regardless of how many wickets they've taken. And the fact he bowls at high speed, he swings the ball both ways, he gets reverse swing, he can bowl Yorkers at will, he can bowl across formats as well. India are truly, truly blessed to have somebody like Jasprit Bumrah at this moment in time.
No, I absolutely agree with that. And yeah, I think I'm looking forward to Bumrah like playing in England or in Australia because he can do a whole lot more in those conditions than he can do in India. Like, he's making the ball talk here in Perth or, you know, in Lords or it's Baston. I think he's going to do a whole lot of damage as well when he plays there. But what I also really like is it's not traditional test match bowling. You see in the second innings, there were a couple of like slower balls at the, you know, cotton bowl that he had. I think it was Hartley. Like, he's doing it in a bunch of different ways. Like, you know, he's got the ball that goes both directions, the Yorkers. He's got the, you know, the one that, like, the bumper as well. And then he's got these, like, slower deliveries. Like, he's got the knuckle balls. He's got a... he is the full package with the old-age test cricket and what you do in T20. He's been able to bring all of this together. And this is why he's so exhilarating to watch. Like, he's a thinker. Like, every ball, he's trying to figure out what he can do to get the batsman off his game. And if that could mean that, you know, he's got to bowl a Yorker and the next ball a slower ball, he's going to do that. Like, he's not, you know, saying that I want to play the way that test cricket was played before and I'm a fast bowler. He's just saying, how can I get the batsman out? And he's ready to do anything that needs.
Absolutely. And that Yorker to Ollie Pope as well. I mean, that was the delivery of the decade, I'd say. It's just that is perfection when you're talking about bowling Yorkers. You just can't get any more perfect than that. So that was England's first innings, then Bumrah causing all that carnage, India taking that first innings lead as well. India then needing, knowing that they needed to post something really significant for England to chase in the final innings, just the way England have been playing in this last couple of years with all this baseball, you know, even 400 didn't necessarily seem like enough when they posted that lead and set England 399. Shubman Gill, though, with another crucial knock, and it's been a long time coming. He was under serious pressure coming into this test series, let alone this test match. Just a string of low scores in test cricket. And look, he's batting in a new position at number three. And he stepped up when the team needed it, 104. And he looks to have cemented his place now, at least for the rest of this series, if not longer. It's great to see somebody like Shubman Gill finally finding his nick again.
Yeah, he was under the hammer, wasn't he? Going into this innings, at least for sure, there were three innings before this. There was a lot of talk chatter around, is he going to find his place in the test side? There's a bunch of other folks who are also out of position in the Indian side right now. They're figuring out maybe he would have lost his position to someone else or like pushed down the order. There was a lot at stake in that innings. And when you saw him bat, you don't see any of that. Like, he's extremely composed. Like, when he made the celebration for 50, he was literally like, all right, I've done this for long enough. I'm not going to make a big deal out of this. Like, even when he, you know, scored his 100, there wasn't a whole bunch of like jumping around and stuff like that. He seemed fairly calm in the way that he went about it. And I don't know, maybe all of this outside noise on whether his position is in jeopardy and things like that, maybe it's a different chat altogether that is happening within the, you know, the dressing room. Maybe he feels that he has cemented his place. At least that's how he came and played in that innings. It was really incredible to watch. Like, he was, you know, attacking cricket. He didn't go into a shell in any way. He had like, what, 15 boundaries and a couple of sixes or something. Like, he was, you know, really out there, calm, and played his brand of cricket, which is really good to watch.
It was brilliant, and it was crucial, as I say, in India being able to set England that total. I mean, look, we'll talk about India's batting sort of collapse in that second innings as well. I mean, for a position cruising at, what was it, 221 for four, and then to be crumbled and losing their last six wickets for not very many. Another disappointing effort, not just from the lower order, which has been pretty decent in recent times for India. It's more so the middle order, which is a concern at the moment. We've seen the top order scoring some runs. Obviously, Jaiswal, Rohit's not at the best of series overall, but, you know, we know what his role is at the top of the order, and he's the captain. Nothing's going to happen to him, right? Gill's now, you know, finally found some form, but it's that middle order without Kohli there, with Shreyas Iyer struggling a little bit. No KL Rahul in this test match, of course. It looks a little bit more exposed than it has in recent times. We've got to talk about KS Bharat, because as far as he might be a wicketkeeper, he's, you know, this is modern day cricket. You've got to be able to score runs, and there's so many other people waiting in the wings who are able to don a pair of gloves to a decent level and score runs consistently. The fact they've persisted, I mean, he's been given a massive long rope. He's lucky that Rishabh Pant is, of course, out at the moment. And I say lucky is in, you know, nobody would have wanted that to happen to Rishabh Pant, of course, in the way that it did. But it's presented a massive opportunity to somebody like Bharat. He's not taken it. He's not taken it. And he's had numerous chances now. And it's not just him. It's the rest of the middle order. It's a concern for India at the moment with the absence of Kohli and Rahul. And Jadeja.
Yeah. I mean, if this is, I'm seeing it as kind of like a similar situation where, you know, Dhoni used to go out for a couple of test matches and they used to bring in like Dinesh Karthik. This guy was probably like, I don't know, in that like 10, 12, 15 year period, the second best keeper, this one incredible batsman. We all know what he's done, like, you know, in T20, but there is Dhoni. You are not going to replace him. I feel like KS Bharat is kind of like in a little bit of a similar situation. Everybody knows they're waiting for Rishabh Pant to come back. and he is going to be the guy for the next like 6, 8, 10 years. Like, there's no question in that. And therefore, like, I'm pretty sure he's kind of like questioning it himself. Like, there's a little bit of like mind games going on with himself, maybe. But yeah, he hasn't sort of, you know, challenged the selectors to say, hey, why not me? I think if anything, he's probably made it a little bit more easier to say, hey, yes, we're waiting for him to come back. But you pose a really good question on the Indian middle order. I think they're going to be so happy that KL Rahul is coming back. Shreyas Iyer, man, I really wish, you know, this guy comes into his own. He's also had a long rope. He's done really well in other formats of the game. Test match has really not been his cup of tea so far. I really think the fact that there was only Jimmy Anderson and three spinners would have made him settle down a little bit, because we all know he's got his problems with the bumper, with the short ball. And I feel like Mark Wood was picked for that reason, because there were a couple of like middle order batsmen who have a problem with the short ball in the first test. So I thought it was playing to his strength, but even then, like him throwing away his wicket like he did in the first innings when he came down the track and, you know, didn't middle one. I hope there's going to be a bit of growth. I see what he did, like Gill getting his century and then Jaiswal getting his double century, to see that if you like went, you know, applied yourself for a little bit, it get a whole lot easier. And we know what he can do, like if he gets in. So it was disappointing to see him throw away his wicket in those in first couple of matches here. But I'm hoping in another test or two, they're going to keep with him, because we know what he can do when he gets in. I'm hoping he really is able to like go and get something big here. But the middle order is looking slightly shaky, and I'm glad that KL Rahul is going to be coming back in the next test match.
Yeah, KL Rahul back. Jadeja could well be out for the entire series. Of course, Shami will be playing in the entire series as well. And Virat Kohli, we don't know whether Kohli's going to be back. Initially, it was reported that he's going to be out for the first two test matches, which has proven to be the case, for personal reasons. Now, there's a lot of reports around as to what those personal reasons might be and whether or not it's the fact that his wife, Anushka, is expecting their second child and they just want a bit of privacy around that. It's probably why they haven't announced it, because of all the crap he got, really, when he missed test matches down in Australia in that famous series when he left after the first test. He left after 36 all out, and yeah, the rest was history, really. It worked out well. So, but you know, initially it was 50-50, wasn't it? A lot of people praising his decision of being a father and being a good husband and being there for the birth of his first child. And the other side of it, you know, a lot of people saying nation comes first, and you've got the uber sort of ultra nationalist kind of vibe going on in one corner as well. So it's a difficult situation. Whether it is that or it isn't that, we don't know for sure. But if it is that, we've not really had any announcements as to the birth of a second child. I'm not sure how it works in India. I mean, it's not quite when the royal family in the UK have a newborn and it's kind of all over the news. They do the pose outside the hospital wing and things like that. Look, there are certain celebrities who love all that and they crave that attention. There are others who just want that privacy. I'm not quite sure what road they'll go down, and if the birth has happened and they've just managed to keep it ultra secret or it's still to come. It doesn't look at this stage, as things stand, as we stand now, what are there, like 9 days left until the test match in Rajkot as we record this podcast. We don't know at this stage whether that's going to be enough time. It doesn't look as though Kohli's going to be able to play in Rajkot because we've not had any announcements yet. We don't know.
Yeah. The thing that's like most interesting to me here is I'm not sure if AB de Villiers were supposed to break the news here. I felt like a little bit of a faux pas to me. I think they were trying to like keep it under wraps as much as possible for their personal reasons. It's I don't think you know, we know exactly all of the details here, and I completely respect and appreciate like the fact that he's like kept BCCI or the selection committee with Dravid and all of these folks in the loop on what's going on. They all seem to be, you know, respecting this decision, which is more than good enough for me. But yeah, like AB de Villiers coming out with this on, which was it? Was it an SAT20 game that he came out and like spoke about it? That was probably not what Kohli was expecting from de Villiers, or maybe it was. I don't know, but it felt funny to me that there was no reporting of it anywhere, you know, from the Indian standpoint. But AB de Villiers like talking about an SAT20. We all know that Kohli and de Villiers are like, you know, incredibly close friends. So I'm pretty sure he knows a lot more than the rest of us. But hey, all power to Kohli, like, and the additions that he's making. He's as close to, you know, the king and the queen that India are going to have, equaling to what you spoke about with the royal family. And,
he's not close. He is the king, right? He's still King Kohli, and that's what he's known as, and that's what we will respect him as well. So whatever decision he makes, I'm sure it'd be the best one for him and for his family as well. So we do respect that. Just in terms of a cricketing point of view as well, though, he is massively, massively missed for India, not just in Test cricket at the moment in this particular series, but in all cricket. Every time Kohli misses a game, it's a big hole in that Indian middle order, and they're finding ways to get around that at the moment, but they could do with him back soon, couldn't they?
Yeah, I'm glad this is happening in India and not in England or Australia, because I think we would have missed him a whole lot more if this was happening overseas. I think in India, this the Indian batting lineup has historically and even in this series done reasonably well. So yeah, I think, you know, family comes first. It's important. Whenever he comes back, he's gonna, you know, slide into that batting lineup in number three position, as he always done. Like, you know, no one's like taking that position away from him. So let's see. It's good that there is a 9-day gap, so that things could change in this. I hear the England team has flown to Dubai and not to Rajkot. I wonder if it's because like Gujarat is a dry state or what's going on there. I'm sure like in another 4 or 5 days, they're going to fly into Rajkot, and you know, the selection for the next test and all of this is going to be decided over the next few days here. So I'm like waiting to see what's going to happen.
Yeah, interesting decision there for England to fly out to Abu Dhabi. They seem to love it there, don't they? They were there in the build-up to the series instead of acclimatizing to India, and they're back there during the gap between matches. But, you know, whatever works for them, I suppose, and they'll say, look, they performed well and the preparation was fine. So more power to them if that's what they feel works best for them. You touched there on Kohli and how much he'll be missed. I've mentioned this before, and I don't want to be too hung up on this, but Kohli, not just the captain. Obviously, that's not going to happen anymore in Test cricket. We know that. Kohli, the leader, he's still a leader within that team. He still offers you that energy out there in the field at the time that wickets are taken, when tactical decisions need to be made. He's there with suggestions for his skipper and for his bowlers. And there's just that different vibe when Kohli is out there on the field. We saw in the first test when Ollie Pope was making the 196 and Rohit Sharma's captaincy, it was a little bit defensive and just let the game meander along, almost let England just do what they wanted, trying to hope for a mistake to happen at some point rather than being proactive and making things happen. That could be another issue going forward in this test series as well. Of course, look, when India win, Rohit Sharma's a genius and everything's all rosy in the garden, as people might say after the Vizag test match. But there is still question marks over his style of captaincy in test cricket in particular, Rohit Sharma. And that's going to be tested going forward in this series as well, I feel, because not only is he under pressure as a captain, he's under pressure as an opener. He's nearly 37 years old. I mean, he's just lost the captaincy of Mumbai Indians, of course, in the IPL, and it's a different format. But, you know, personally, things, you know, weighing quite heavy on his shoulders at the moment. He's the kind of guy not to let that overawe him publicly. We might not ever know about it, judged on, you know, judging by his reactions and his demeanor. But surely it must be playing on him a little bit. And that pressure is huge on his captaincy at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the situation was kind of similar with Gill, and I love the fact that he came out and made a statement in that second innings in the second test. I'm really looking forward to Rohit Sharma, like, you know, coming out strong in the third test. I do agree that there's been a bit of a chatter around, you know, his decisions as a captain on the field. I feel like Bumrah's kind of bailed him out a couple of times here. And I mean, that sometimes is all a captain needs to look like a genius. When you have Vaughan and McGrath, you're going to look good as a keep on thing. So that plays into captaincy too. But yeah, I do agree that the touring spinners who have a total of like, you know, 4 test matches to them or something like that, they have been out bowling the Indian spinners who are, you know, in their own ways, legends. Like Ashwin's got 499 wickets and things of this nature. So the English, you know, spin attack has had a better bowling average and a better economy rate than the Indian spinners. I wonder if there is a captaincy component to that with the attacking fields that you set up and, you know, the conditions that you create to be able to. We know that Kohli is always thinking attack, attack, attack. You always don't see that with Rohit Sharma. So I feel like, you know, the spin attack and the captaincy kind of like, you know, comes hand in hand here. And you can see that with, you know, the fact that since 1980, it's never happened that an Indian spinner in India has not taken 4 wickets in an innings. This is the first time it's ever happened. So, and the, you know, touring spinners, you know, bowling better than the Indian spinners. I think this kind of plays into it. And him as a batter himself, he's not got big scores. I'm not too worried about that. We all know Rohit Sharma. It's been like 15 years that he's been doing this. I expect him to come back in the third test match and like really make a statement. But I'm looking, you know, pretty closely at the spinners and how they're able to, like, you know, really put more pressure and not concede at the runs at the rate that they have been. When the English spinners are able to do that, they, you know, Indian spinners should be able to do a much better job with the amount of experience that they have.
Fascinatingly poised this series, 1-1, 3 to play. This is the kind of excitement that you just will never ever get from white ball cricket. A series like this, 2 brilliant test matches, 2 sides really going for it. India so dominant in home conditions normally, England with this new style just pushing them as hard as they possibly can. It's so exciting. I'm gutted there's a bit of a gap now between the second and the third tests. Of course, we'll be back before that third test match to bring you a full preview as well. That's about all we've got time for on this episode though. But just before we go, Shunab, I mentioned your podcast earlier on. Tell us a little bit more about it. Where can we find it? What's it called? What's it about?
Yeah. So I host a podcast called Conversations at the Cow's Corner, Midwicket Cow's Corner, quick pun there. We talk about the evolution of cricket. We all love test cricket, but we all know that not every, you know, associate member nation or even the full, you know, the top 10 cricketing nations in the world, they all aren't like playing test cricket at the same level as India, England and Australia are. So we see this like, you know, change evolution in cricket where there's a lot more leagues coming up. So we wanted to kind of like understand how cricket's evolving, cover the T20 leagues a lot more. That's the goal, the business of cricket. That's what we try to like cover in our like podcast. Yeah, we do one like every week and a half or so, and try to like cover all the big stories that are happening in the world of the evolution of cricket.
Where can listeners find you on social media?
Yeah, I'm at Goshri on Twitter, and you can find the Conversation at Cow Corner on Spotify and on Apple Podcasts.
Great stuff. Do give him a follow. Do give the podcast a listen as well. And if you enjoyed this episode, give us a like, subscribe to our podcast as well. And we look forward to bringing you lots more content in the future as well. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, whatever you want to call it these days, and Instagram at Nikesh Raghani. And this is a production brought to you by Cricket 8, of course, India on Cricket 8. So go and search for Cricket 8. Give them a follow across social media as well. But for now, that's all we've got time for. We'll be back with you before the third test. Thanks for listening.